Hello, everybody. J.J. Cooper, Ian Cundle, Baseball America Prospect Podcast. And I'm going to start with a little bit of apology. I did say last week that we were going to talk about Complex League and younger, well, Complex League, DSL, ACL, FCL players this week on the podcast. We're going to push that back. Main reason? Be crazy not to have Josh Norris on that podcast. And Josh Norris, as we are recording this, is literally on the field at the Draft Combine right now in Arizona. So doesn't make a whole lot of sense to do that and not have Josh, who is bouncing around the complex as we speak, when he's not at the combine. We need to have him on that. So we got a little bit of a different topic today, but hopefully one that you will enjoy just as much. We're going to really drill down on two players. And the reason we're going to do that is both to kind of, hopefully you'll be interested in the players we're talking about, but also how, as we love to talk about the rankings process here, how the process works. And I will just kind of start off, Ian, like, we've both been doing this for a while. This is one of the reasons that I love doing this and it never gets old. At the same time, it also could be said that this is one of the reasons it gets really difficult, which is players change for good or bad. And when players change, you then have to determine whether it's good or bad. Is this a little bit of a hot streak, a cold streak, something off the field going on, something, is this something permanent? Is it sticky? Is it just a fleeting moment? And we're going to talk about a couple of players that we have moved down in the rankings in our updates during the season. We'll explain why. And also kind of set the stage a little bit. We've got a big update coming next week. We are busy working on it. That's why this one will also be a little bit shorter, to also just be transparent about everything. We love doing these, you know, and we love doing all the stuff we do. This is not complaining, but at the same time, there are weeks like this where it's like, okay, how am I gonna get everything done? And one of the ways you do that is instead of going for an hour, we're gonna go for a tight 30 minutes, hopefully, here on the podcast. But to just dive straight into it, Ian, one of the guys we're talking about, first one we're gonna talk about, is the Red Sox right-hander, Kyson Witherspoon. Slid down in our Red Sox rankings and the top 100, but before we get into what's happening now, kind of just lay out why that happened. What were we seeing that led to Witherspoon dropping?
Yeah, so Witherspoon, it was funny because I saw him in spring training and he looked a lot like the guy we saw in college. You know, fastball was 95 to 98, had multiple, you know, really polished, good secondaries, throwing strikes, just looked very good. It was a very crisp outing. Threw again in the spring breakout game. Wasn't as good as when I saw him on the backfields, but he was still fine. You know, it was a solid outing. And then during the regular season, it just, you know, and this is what JJ was saying, development's not linear. You know, there's going to be ebbs and flows both in season and from season to season. And in Witherspoon's case, this was his first pro season. And I think it's just a little bit of trying to do too much. And he kind of lost who he was as a pitcher. And, you know, this is a guy who was a highly successful college arm, pitched at Oklahoma, you know, year before they win the national championship. He got out of there, but he was a very good college pitcher and he was very effective, you know, pitching at the top of the zone with his fastball. And then he had several secondaries that he could bring and miss bats with down in the zone. And during the offseason, you know, he started trying to tweak some things. They tried, there was obviously a very popular video of him going to driveline and trying to learn a sweeper. And I think just as the season went on, those little tweaks started to impact his ability to throw his fastball. His fastball started to regress pretty considerably. And this was not just one, you know, multiple sources talking to people that getting grades that you just wouldn't expect for him on his fastball. Cause coming out of the draft, I think we had a 55 or a 60 on it.
It became a dead zone fastball, did it? Yeah. It was kind of the worst kind of movement profile you could see. And without elite velocity to go with it either. Right.
Yeah. It was 93 to 95 with dead zone shape. And like, I was getting grades of like 30s on it, which is not good for someone that was a 60, 55, 60 fastball in college last year.
Explain, if you would, to someone who doesn't understand when we say dead zone fastball, what do we mean by, look, okay, I'll start with saying, as crazy as it may seem, 93 to 95 does mean that you don't have the velocity to over. If you throw 101, you can have your whatever movement you want to your fastball. It doesn't really matter that much.
Yep.
93, 95, you can very much have a dead zone fastball. So what does that mean?
Well, especially from the right side too, because average fastball velocity from right-hander in MLB this year, I think it's over 95. I think it's like 95, point something. It's in that range. So that's, you know, fringy below average velocity from the right side. And what it, dead zone fastball is just the shape. It talks about the shape. And when we talk about, I feel like, you know, we've talked about a lot on here, induced vertical break, release height, vertical approach angle, things like that. It's all the comp, everything that goes into making a fastball where it has that effect of carrying when it's up in the zone. Or, you know, because you have the sinking fastballs down and then you have the riding, you know, cut carry. There's a few variations of it. But when it has explosive life or it kind of plays above its perceived velocity up in the zone, dead zone fastballs are ones that kind of just don't really have any characteristics that you're looking for. They're not sinkers. They're not four seamers with ride. They're just kind of caught in between with generic movement profiles is how I would kind of describe it.
And the worst thing you can be as a pitcher, I hate to, you know, this, but the reality of it is right. The worst thing you can be as a pitcher is to be very much like something that hitters regularly see.
Mm-hmm.
The way that, again, no hitter, Ted Williams could not track the ball all the way to contact at the plate. That's not how your eyes work. That's not how you can do it. You basically see the pitch and then your brain, visual chunking, tries to fit it into the closest thing it sees to what it's seen like that before. And if your pitch is unusual, you kind of break the brain a little bit there, right? Mm-hmm. So if you have more life on it, you know, at the top, you know, at the top of the zone, then the brain thinks that it should put the bat here and then the ball ends up being above it. Now, what hitters do now, having a much, you know, this is a cat and mouse game. Okay. They'll get a visual, they'll get a cue. They'll get a cue that says, hey, this guy's got really good life on his fastball. Try to swing a ball above or two balls above. And then, and they work on that in, you know, drills, Dragic machines, other things. But you work on teaching yourself to hit that pitch. But the best world, if you're a hitter, is when someone's throwing a fastball, that is exactly what your brain thinks mm-hmm. it will be. That's a dead zone fastball. So yep. He had a dead zone fastball. Okay, sorry. We have taken him to that. So what did that lead to?
It led to about a 10% strikeout rate on his fastball, which not good. That's like well below average. That's a concerning level. I don't think it, like, even if you throw in the high 90 or high 80, excuse me, that's a concerning level. Like,
and it has cascades effects too, because yes. What that means is hitters have, they're not fearing your fastball. They're not saying I have to look fastball to not get beat. They're hoping to see your fastball. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And the secondaries do not play as well off of that, as we've seen. Because what is the idea of a changeup? It looks like a fastball until it's late and it falls off the table. If your fastball is not very effective, your secondaries are not going to be as effective. And you can notice with Kyson Witherspoon, if you look at his season statistics, his April was not very good. He had a 7.13 ERA in 17 and two-thirds innings. He allowed it's 21 hits, 12 walks. He had 20 strikeouts, but you know, that's a ton of base runners. You go into the month of May, first two starts were kind of more or less the same thing, culminating in the May 12th start where he had one strikeout in 4 2/3 innings. This is a guy who was seen as, you know, a potential top 10 pick, one of the best college right-handers, the type of profile of a player who moves very quickly. By this point, Anthony Ianson, who the Red Sox drafted the same year, was already in Double A, and you have Kyson Witherspoon striking out one guy in 4 2/3 innings in High A. And that's, you know, obviously a concern. He got skipped after that start. Since his skip, he's thrown 20 and a third innings. He has allowed 16 hits. He has struck out 22 hitters, so more than a batter per inning. He struck out 28 hitters in that time. And his numbers are just back to kind of what you expected from a college player performing as they will. His strikeout rate on his his whiff rate on his fastball has jumped. It's above, I believe it's above 30%. I haven't looked since his most recent start, but it's it's an above average rate now. It's back. The velocity is back.
I'll look that up while we're talking. So
his velocity, he's sitting in the mid 90s again. Like, he looks like the pitcher you expected coming out of Oklahoma. And it was just little things. It was basically just getting back to who he was as a pitcher, just going out there and competing, attacking the zone, and not trying to worry about, you know, changing anything or, you know, any of the tweaks that maybe he worked on in the offseason or even at the start of the season. It was just go back to what you do well. And it's just completely shifted his profile. You know, you're talking to scouts before and it was like, hey, this guy might be a reliever. And that's not something you usually hear in the first month of a guy's pro career coming off of with the pedigree of Kyson Witherspoon. Now it's back to, hey, this guy's, you know, this is more like what I was expecting. This is more, you know, a potential starting prospect. It's completely flipped. And it all, to me, it all goes back to the fastball, because everything I mean, as we know, everything with a pitcher, especially if you're going to be a starter, you have to have a fastball. You have to be able to pitch off your fastball. And with his fastball back to missing bats, everything is playing better, to no surprise. If you watched his most recent start against Jersey Shore, he was dominating just by throwing fastballs up at the belt and then just ripping breaking balls and changeups down the zone. And it's a pretty, you know, it's simple when you boil it down, but it's a different story to execute it. And I think it just shows that, you know, it's really like pro baseball is very different than college, because you're focusing on this full time and you're going out there and you have so many different things that you're having to think about. You have development goals, but at the same time, you're also competing. And I think at times it can be hard for pitchers, especially, to kind of blend those two things, because you're so focused on, hey, I need to execute this pitch in this specific spot. But at the same time, at the end of the day, what matters more is it that, or is it just going out there and saying, hey, just get results? And what is the best way to do that? And I think that's why it can be hard when you're evaluating pitchers, because you don't know, we don't know a lot of the time what they're working on developmentally in a given start. You know, I've gone to games before and you'll see pitchers and they're throwing 70% breaking balls. And you're like, this makes no sense to throw a breaking ball in this situation. That's a developmental goal. And I think with Witherspoon's, that kind of got a little bit out of whack. And now it's just back to, hey, just go out there, be yourself, and the results are showing. And he's been excellent as of late. As I said, you know, the month of June, 18 strikeouts and 15 and a third innings. He had the two starts at the end of the month last year where he only gave up one run. Last outing, he had 8 strikeouts, which was the most of his career. And I think it shows that, you know, when stuff like this happens, you can't overreact too soon, because that's the hardest thing to do in this. Is everything, when we're putting these rankings out, we're putting the top 100, the top 30, it's all a snapshot in time. It's very fluid. Situations are going to change. And the Witherspoon one is a great example, because, you know, if you talk to a couple scouts who saw him at the beginning of the season, you're going to get one report. You talk to someone who saw his Jersey Shore start, you're getting a completely different report. And so that's why I think it's, you don't want to overreact, especially with the pedigree guys. And yes, you know, he did move out of the top 100, but he's not going to drop far in the Red Sox system as a preview. Like, he's going to still be right on the verge of the top 100. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up back in there at some point this year, because that's, you know, he's getting back to more of what we expected when he was drafted.
And you said that's the challenge here is, by the way, 27% strikeout whiff rate, I should say.
It's around 30%. Yeah, that's yeah. But it was down to 10% before. So you see that to balance that out, that's difference. Yeah.
So it's a truly massive difference. Exactly. And that's what we're talking about. This is the challenge that we're talking about. It's like, so I kind of want to talk about this partly because it's like, okay, we try to also lay out when we make movements as much as we can. Here's why guys moving up. Here's why guys moving down. The other part I want to make clear is it's not something where we're just looking and go, oh, Witherspoon's had a better month this month. He moves back up. Better month. That's not worst month, better month. There are times that guys have a month statistically terrible or have a month that statistically is amazing. And then when you dig in and you talk to people and do the reporting, it's like, there's really nothing new here.
Yeah.
But if there is something tangible that's changed, that's when you make, and again, this seems like this is the perfect example of, do we think this could be sticky? Absolutely. Why do we think it could be sticky? Because he's really kind of more back to the guy that was the guy who was drafted. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what you're expecting to see. So that's a look at a pitcher who has gone through a little bit of a roller coaster. When we come back to this break, we're going to talk about a hitter who did very much the same thing right after this.
When my puppy Bella has something wrong, I'm not going to go around Googling what to do.
Yeah, Kratz, let's have a better plan. Today's episode is sponsored by the ASPCA Pet Health Insurance Program. It offers customizable accident and illness plans that can fit your budget, your lifestyle, and even your pet's particular quirks. Because let's be honest, vet bills can add up fast. ASPCA Pet Health Insurance has been around for almost 30 years and has covered over 1 million pets. And when it's time to submit a claim, it's easy. Just use their app and receive reimbursement for eligible vet bills directly into your bank account so you can get back to focusing on what really matters, your pet. To explore coverage, visit aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. That's aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. Again, that's aspcapetinsurance.com/foul. This is a paid advertisement. Insurance is underwritten by either Independent American Insurance Company or United States Fire Insurance Company and produced by PTZ Insurance Agency Limited. The ASPCA is not an insurer and is not engaged in the business of insurance.
So, Ian, I'll do more of the talking on this one because I do the Tigers. You do the Red Sox for us. Mm-hmm. So Tiger shortstop Bryce Rainer, but we've talked about Bryce Rainer, you and I, about this.
Yep.
he's an example of kind of how this can work for a position player, right? So Bryce Rayner slid in our top 100 rankings last month, and not really in the Tigers rankings because there really wasn't anywhere for him to slide. He was behind Max Clark before. He's behind Max Clark now. He's not moving further down from that. Josue Briseño hasn't played yet, basically, because of injury. So, but in the 100, he fell. And I'm pretty happy with what we did on this, which is we talked about it at the time, that we had a group of players who we kind of said like we were putting them in timeout, basically. They were moving down, but they weren't moving off of the 100, right? They were putting him in a position where if the trend line kept going in that direction, they very well likely would move off in our next update, which I'll just again point out, July 1st is when we're planning to roll these out.
Yep.
But then you also are doing it that because you also know players change. And so you don't want to overreact to something. And in Bryce Rayner's case, coming off of a shoulder injury, significant shoulder injury cost him most of the second half of last season and a little bit more than that. Came back, we saw him in spring training, and I will say I saw him the first time I saw him swing, I went like, that's
yeah. bad.
Like, I mean, and then I showed the video to you guys, and everyone was like, was Bryce Rayner like this before? I mean, it was one of those things where we talk about noisy setups, right? And when you talk about a noisy setup, really, there are different ways to hit. I've talked to a lot of scouts about this. I've talked to a lot of coaches about this, and there's a lot of theories, a lot of things. But when we talk about noisy, we're talking about what we could best be described as extraneous movement that makes it more difficult, that adds length, time, difficulty of being consistent in going from you're ready to swing, and I'm going to do it right hand because I'm not left-handed like Rayner, but you're going ready to swing to contact, right?
Yeah.
And in Bryce Rayner's case, and we wrote about this at baseballamerica.com, talked about it with people like with the Tigers who have said, we're very aware, we're working on it. He knows that he's working on it. He had gotten, everything had again gotten noisier. He had this bat waggle, which wasn't the bat waggle of this is my way to get the timing, because it wasn't consistent. It wasn't something where it's like, okay, that flows. It was something where it's like you could almost see like if he was waggling the bat more, he was going to be a little bit more lost in the at-bat. And then it became a little loopier on getting from there to into his swing. Swing got longer. Strikeout rate, the miss rate skyrocketed, right? And so that's what we saw. Strikeout rates that were way too high. The power was still there. And in his case, basically, I went June 1st, and I'm not saying that was an arbitrary endpoint. Like, you could say that it was happening in May, because we saw signs of it even like early May. We saw signs of it in late April, that you would every now and then see it at bat where it's like, oh, he looks more like the Bryce Rayner we saw last year. But since June 1st, as we record this, Rayner is hitting 356, 435, 635, and most importantly, with a 24% miss rate. He had a 32% miss rate up to the end of May. Cutting your miss rate by 8% allows everything else to play a whole lot better. And that's kind of why, again, his is going to be a little more subtle. I would say in Kyson Witherspoon's case, you're probably going to notice more on his movement next week when we roll this out. In Rayner's case, you may not notice it as much, but I'll still say what you're going to know is he is much closer to the prospect that we thought he was coming into the year, coming off the injury, because he's getting back to more of why he was an elite top of the first round, a shortstop prospect who was like, well, do you like Connor Griffin or do you like Bryce Rayner more coming into the draft? That kind of player. Now, but I do want to run one thing by you and see what you think on this. The one thing is fascinating about it, though, is Rayner has real power. Like, you see EVs, you see home runs that are like mammoth. But usually when you see that in a teenage hitter, it is something where they get a fastball in, they get the bat head out, and that ball just goes. In Rayner's case, almost all of them, he's hit 7 extra base hits in June at the time we record this. None have gone to right field. He's a left-handed hitter. One to center, everything else to left, center, or left. Now, he hits home runs sometimes that still have carry, but It's for him, it's about getting his hands extended and then kind of flicking the bat. It is not about getting something in. Usually you see a lot of left-handed hitters who their dream is you come in down and in on a fastball with them and they can get that pitch that they can just absolutely drive. That's not Rainer. Now, I just wanted, like, it's something that had struck me for now as interesting more than like yay or nay. I love seeing opposite field power as part of a whole field approach. Junior Caminero's opposite field power when he was in the minors really kind of was a selling point to me, but I will point out with that, that was something where Junior Caminero would pull a ball 450 feet in the first, and then you would hit a ball 390 feet or 400 feet oppo in the seventh, and you'd be like, and then you might hit one to center to, you know, 425 in between. You're like, works for me. Like, he has the ability, if you go away, I can go away. If you come in, I can go in. Are you a little more concerned when you see a young hitter who doesn't yet, like, he does not pull the ball? Like, if you look at his spray chart, which I'm sure if you're on actually, you know what? I will share this. Let me put all games on here. This is for the entirety of this, you know, this, and I'll put it on the YouTube channel. I will just kind of add that as something for us to see. But it is something, when you see that, how worried are you when you see a guy who basically, this is a left-handed hitter who has yet to hit the ball to the wall to right field?
I mean, I think it two things come to mind. And number one is that he just really likes, as you said, he likes to get extended and likes to let the ball get deep. And that to me would lend itself to someone whose swing is maybe a little slower, that would be a concerning element. But I know in Rainer's case, we've seen the bat speed is not really an issue, especially when he's a guy producing, you know, his 90th, I think, is over 110 miles an hour. And yeah, you're not getting
one thing with that. It's hard to have like a 115 EV with a slow bat. I'm not saying
that. And that's what I was going to say is, yeah, like when you see his EVs, it's probably not the bat thing. So that to me, it lends itself to more being probably a mechanical situation where the way that his swing works, it just takes him a little longer to get going, but then he's plenty quick enough once he gets going. And I feel like with left-handed hitters too, and I think the most extreme example of this in the minor leagues is someone we've talked about a lot is Eric Hartman, where everything is pull side with him. And the way he does it is he's catching the ball way out front of the plate, and it's just home runs to right field, left and right. You can get around it a different way. And with Rainer's case, if his situation is he likes to get the ball, get deep, and he just trusts his hands, then you can make that work too. But at some point, you are going to have to start pulling the ball with authority, because otherwise, if teams notice this, and especially when you get up into the high minors, and this is something where I feel like it doesn't really get exposed until you get to Double A, Triple A, because that's when pitchers start to be able to execute is, hey, I'm just going to jam you with fastballs in on your hands. And if you're trying to go, if you're trying to get extended, if you're going to be late on it, that's not going to work anymore. You're just going to get sawed off. And I think that's something that will be interesting to see. And I obviously have not dug into Rainer as much as you, haven't watched as much video of it, but how does he handle fastballs in? Like, what is his efficiency there? Because I think that's going to be the indication of whether it's more of like a bat speed thing, which I don't think it is, and more of just the way his swing works and the way his swing is tuned is more towards just going to left field right now.
So that's Bryce Rainer, who, again, I would just point out, this is encouraging. This is a month that is very much what we wanted to see from him. And again, not even that, like, that's why we didn't drop off the 100. This wasn't something where it's like, oh, this was not fixable. It's like, we've seen a better swing than this before. We're seeing a better swing than this again. I would say that gives him some stickiness to the possibility that this is really, and especially, this is not something where he went away for the offseason and basically just reworked his swing for no reason. This was a player coming off of a significant shoulder injury. And when you have something like that, it's not shocking that it takes you a little while.
No.
That to me is not surprising at all, that this was kind of like a working your way back. But we wanted to lay out a little bit of an example. Okay, before we wrap this up, what is an example to you of something that you don't feel is sticky, right? Like, so almost everything, like to some extent, Hector Rodriguez, to bring up another guy, systematic Reds outfielder, Hector Rodriguez, I want to say it was a 60% swing percentage when he was an A-ball, 59. It was one of those things where if you said, here are the mass of every hitter in the minors, and you said, what is Hector Rodriguez's swing percentage? It was like, yeah, I'm going to be a standard deviation above almost anyone else. It was like, and Hector Rodriguez had the ability to put bat on ball, even on pitches that he probably should not have put bat on ball. That was a skill, but it's also kind of a detriment to him. But you watch him as he's come up the ladder and all, and every year his swing percentage goes down. And again, now it's still aggressive, but it's not uber aggressive. That's an example to me of things that you would expect to see a player improve. I would say the flip side of that, though, is if you say, like, what is something that's kind of not as sticky to me, it would be the player who does not have bat-to-ball skills. It's really hard to – if you have swing and miss in the zone consistently when you were a younger player, unless you have strength issues or things like that, like physical development still to go – that's one that to me is often a little bit tougher to get to a point of, oh, okay, that's no longer an issue.
Yeah. I think chase rate too is similar to that. It's pretty hard once you have an established track record of being a high chase guy. And I think it more applies to the guys that are in, like, you know, the 35-40% range in the low minors. It just feels like that really sticks with them throughout their minor league career. That's a really tough thing, I think, to kind of get by, because that's just, that's who they are. You know, it's an aggressive approach. It's a pitch recognition issue. It's a combination of the two. And it's hard to kind of outgrow that. You know, for every Ronald Acuna, there's going to be way more guys who do not ever change really with that.
And I would also say with that, like, okay, if you tell me that a 17 or an 18 year old in A ball has trouble with that, and then doesn't have that problem in a 19, 20 year old, they were in A ball as an 18 year old because they're so good at everything else.
Yeah.
Whereas if you tell me that a 21, 22-year-old has that problem in A-ball, it's going to probably be a little bit harder because they don't have that headroom of all these other players who are more older than them, and so they have time to catch up. If you're already league age appropriate or later, probably a little bit tougher to do that. Although I will say also, like I've always said, I've used this story before, but it's like going into the Hall of Fame this year, but Andruw Jones, when I saw him as a 17-year-old, you say, well, what is his big weakness? It's like rolling over on sliders away. And if you said 28-year-old Andruw Jones, if you said, well, what was his weakness? You would say rolling over on sliders away. So like even the great ones, the ones who can do most everything, they still can have these flaws that are, you know, and even when we say like, oh, you know, sometimes we'll say a player has a hole in his swing inside, like down low inside or whatever. Now, it's not that they can't make adjustments to cover that hole. However, often most hitters don't have the ability to cover the entire strike zone on every swing. If they go to cover that hole, is it going to create a bigger hole or a more problematic hole? Or is it something where if you know that you have a hole and you know that pitchers are going to try to go there, are they going to be able to execute it? Because sometimes if you have a hole and it's in an area where, okay, a pitcher may miss a little bit outside of that hole in a place where you really can do something, sometimes you almost kind of want, it's a cat and mouse game. It's very fun. But again, there's going to be a lot more coming at baseballamerica.com. But we did want to talk about a couple of prospects who are showing some encouraging signs this month. One for the Red Sox, one for the Tigers. And that is this week's Baseball America Prospect Podcast. Much more over at the Baseball America YouTube channel. We had, you know, live shows from after every College World Series game. We have the Hot Sheet show. We have the Draft Podcast. We have future, you know, we have so much over there to check out, but also check out baseballamerica.com. For Ian, I'm JJ. So long, everybody.